St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to the Wealth Money Radio Show, brought to you by WealthMoney.org. Byron Dale and Greg Soderbergh are your hosts. This is the only program that addresses the destructive consequences of using a debt money system. Financial slavery is the result when all money is created and put into circulation through loans. How interest grows the debt, but not the money supply, and the effects that interest and debt has on our lives. If you would like to join the program and have a question or a comment, please call 347-884-9499. That's 347-884-9499. And now your hosts, Byron Dale and Greg Soderbergh.
What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
When all money is created as loans, forcing us into debt to get money created, we do owe our soul to the money creator. And Tennessee, he called it the company store, but it's really the banking industry. Good morning and welcome to Wealth Money Radio, July 6, 2019. I'm Greg Soderbergh. I'm here with Byron Dale. Again, Wealth Money Radio is the only show that, it's a unique show, no other show like it. It's about what we use for money, how it's created and put into circulation, how that affects our lives, and proposed legislation called the American Transportation Act. Our website is wealthmoney.org. You can click on the slider images to read our writings like Roads and Bridges Without Taxing or Borrowing, The Switch, Education and Our Debtonomy. You can read the material, print it, save it, attach them to emails. You can also get our other books, Modern Money Secrets, Tales from the Treasury, and others at wealthmoney.org. So call in today and be a part of the show. The number is 347-884-9499. Good morning, Byron.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Pretty good.
I think we're going to talk a little about, I think Leslie's on, wants to talk a little on the show, too. We'll get him a little bit. I think that's his number. We want to talk a little bit later. We'll talk to Leslie a little first, and then we'll talk about Trump having this Judy Stelton put on the Federal Reserve. And it looks like, from what I can read, she looks like she's probably a Austrian type of economic professor, because mm-hmm. they're the ones that push the whole concept of that gold is the money we should use. And I've researched this every way I can, and I cannot find out any place where we really actually used a whole lot of gold for money. Now, it's clearly to see that we used a lot of silver for money years ago. I used to go to Billings, and I would come home with silver dollars in my pocket because they used them a lot there in Billings. But I never did ever see any place that anybody used a dollar coin. And my dad was born in 1896, and he can only remember ever seeing one coin in his lifetime, one gold coin in his lifetime. With that, we'll open up to see what Leslie has to say, and we'll go from there. Is that you, Leslie?
It's me, Byron. Good morning. Hi, Greg.
Good morning. What's happening?
Yeah, go ahead.
A little update on my campaign. I've moved over from District 5, which is Minneapolis, because the Republican Party at a meeting indicated that they don't think there's any chance of winning District 5. So why should I just run at a dead end? So I'm moving over to District 3, which is like Bloomington, Edina, Minnetonka, and those western suburbs of the Twin Cities. And I'll run against Dean Phillips. So, because he won the last election 56-44. So that's a reasonable number to try to overcome rather than going up against an 80-20, which was Minneapolis. And, you know, we got all the Minneapolis socialists and they just vote the straight DFL socialist line. So I think I'll have a better chance in the western suburbs.
Leslie, what did
it sounds to me like you have a Muslim, you have a Muslim group there that's pretty strong, and that's how come the Muslim lady got it elected.
In Minneapolis, they have the largest Muslim community in America. Thousand, like 80, 90,000. So she won the last election about 270,000 votes to about 40, something like that. And she's already raised $1 million. But she might not be the DFL candidate because I got an email from actually two different people that said they got a robocall that asked if they would prefer the council person Jenkins to Omar in the next election as the DFL candidate. So she's Omar's not home free because that Draskowski legislator, he's after her for her violations of federal campaign laws and things like that. So there's no sure thing that she's the candidate, but whoever it'll be will have the DFL socialist support. Really tough to beat in Minneapolis. So that's why I'm moving over to the suburbs.
I don't. And you don't have, what is the Republican Party going to support you any in the other district?
Well, they're saying that the they're going to go for the endorsement next March. So, you know, this being July, we've got all the way to March for the endorsing convention. And then they'll ask, will you abide by the endorsement? So I'm thinking of those things. But meanwhile, I'm fighting off a cold, and then I'll start campaigning a little bit in the western suburbs. I'm thinking of contacting people like the Chambers of Commerce and the NRA and VFW and groups like that and starting to talk to them. I'm not up for going
that
to knock on.
Sense.
Yeah, I'm not going to knock on door to door unless it's for some kind of maybe a photo op or a news op, but I don't think that's where it is. The Republicans say they're going to launch a significant ground game, but, you know, I don't like that. I like talking to groups and distributing the material indoors. I'm not really going to go door to door. But I'll say, you know, the great thing about a mind is that you can always change it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they say,
I guess so.
Well, let's talk,
you can
let's
change
talk a little
opinion.
Bit about.
They
let's,
say
is
the mind is everything.
Party talking about they're not pushing anybody particularly yet in this district, are they?
No, they say they're not going to endorse anybody. They're going to go by the convention. But we know that they have their favorites. I went to the meeting with them, and there were seven candidates for this District 5, and I didn't think any of them were really a significant challenge to anything, but I stepped out. I don't know who's running in District 3, but I contacted the Republican chair in that district, and she told me that she sent the in my information onto the state and national committees. So we'll see what happens. I'm in. Yeah, I've got my bio up there. I've notified the media, and, of course, they're ignoring it at this point, not just me, but everybody. They seem to be focusing on the Democratic debates right now.
So
well,
I'm
sure that's probably true. Cause...
What about Miss Leslie in this Congressional District 3? How did Phillips win it last time? What was his sales pitch?
Well, he was just a DFL. He's got a lot of money. He comes from a wealthy family. He's a millionaire. He was pretty well financed. He had a nice little truck. He drove around the district, and he convinced people to vote for him. I forget the name of the guy that had the seat before him, but he had it for 10 years, from 2009 to 2019. But his name escaped me right at the
Eric
point.
Paulson. Eric Paulson was that guy.
Yeah, he got 44% of the vote. So he lost. He got knocked out.
Yeah, he'd been in there for a long time.
10 years.
He started originally. I think he's been in there longer than that. He might not have been, because he was in the state legislature for a while. But he started out as an aide to the congressman that was there before him, and he worked with him, and then he come back, and then he moved in back into the cities, and then he run for the house in the state house, and he won, and then he was there probably. I think it's more than 10 years, but he could, because he's been there for a long time. But
You ever speak to those guys about money?
A little few times. Oh yeah.
You ever speak to him about money?
Oh yeah. When he first got in, the first year he was in there, and I know it was more than 10 years, he was kind of interested, but the longer he was in there, then he wasn't, at the end, he wasn't interested at all. And then he got a job working for Target. And I don't know what in the world he would have done for Target, but obviously Target then had their own man in the House and representatives in Minnesota, because that's what he had a job for them. And I had never was able to hear what kind of a job it was, but he had a job for them when he was in the legislature in downtown St. Paul. Those things I know for a fact.
I think, Leslie, I would kind of go back and do some homework on Phillips and see what it was he said, and if he said anything repeatedly that made the voters think he was the guy they wanted. That might kind of give you a clue about how you might want to run in that district. But, of course, you know, you want to talk about the money and you want to talk about prosperity and lower taxes and no fuel taxes and, you know, those things we've talked about before.
Well, I'm going to lunch with a guy Tuesday or Wednesday, a businessman in Minneapolis who knows Dean Phillips, his father and his grandfather, and we'll get together and fill me in. He indicated that he's not a supporter of Phillips, but he knows him pretty well. And I'm looking here at this Eric Paulson. He was in the U.S. in the House from 2009 to in the Minnesota House from 95 to 2008, and then in the federal Congress from 2009 to 2019. So he was in for 10 years. So he'd been in government a while, you know. He was defeated in the general election, so that takes care of him.
That's kind of funny what Byron said about, I think it was Paulson, you know, he was interested in the money in the beginning, but the longer he was in there, the less interested he became. It just kind of shows you, it's kind of par for the course. If a guy gets in there that really wants to do something good, they have a tendency to evolve over time and just turn in to be like the rest of them.
I don't know why that is. You would think they would get stronger and really carry on, so somebody must have gotten to them about something.
Yeah, you know, to change
their
mind.
Well, it's pretty obvious if you're down. I've been down there an awful, awful lot, you know, not recently, but and it was clear, and I'm talking to another freshman congressman down there, woman, and she said, I said, well, it seems to me like these guys, when they first get elected, they, you know, they pretty much want to do things for the people that they elect them, but it only takes a year or so that then they don't pay any attention to that again. It's just always what the state wants. And she said,
yeah, well, I'm not very patriotic there.
And that's
what
happens.
Well, it's like this Phillips guy. This Phillips guy owns a coffee shop and had a company, Talente, making gelato. But he's an heir of the Phillips Distilling Company, so his family was in the alcohol-producing business. So he's rich, and he's in position now, but he's a DFLer. They support killing the babies. They support the socialist agenda, and I need to get out there and expose them. So we'll see.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
And I was listening a little bit to the radio in the car a little bit the other day, and they were talking about some guy who was supposed to be kind of famous, and, man, he was really anti-life. I mean, he thought it was okay, even up to 30 days after the baby was born, if you decided that there was maybe something wrong or something, then you could kill it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, my gosh, I mean, it's really a shame to believe that America has gone down the dark tube so far.
I put an abortion video up on my YouTube site.
All kinds of bullshit.
Yeah, YouTube put an age limit on the video that I put up about abortion. They didn't like the pictures, but it's pretty gruesome on my YouTube. It's just to go Earth Protector YouTube, and it's right there. It's only about a minute and a half, but it shows what they do when they pull out the babies in the abortions. They pull out the pieces at a time. So I showed them spread out on the table, and they didn't like that at YouTube, and they put an age restriction. I don't know. They put an age restriction on my video being shown, but they didn't put an age restriction on the girls that can have those babies ripped out of them. So it's kind of pretty hypocritical. But those are my issues.
Well, they are. I mean, it's amazing.
Money plan, stop the socialists, and got a great agenda. Good bio.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that we've gone that direction, you know. And it's clear that it came from the colleges because, you know, all these college kids, they really are pretty much leftists, and so is the high schools. My granddaughter.
Well, they bought it since 1973.
Only one of them was a constitutionalist in the whole high school.
Uh-huh.
The rest of them were totally, really Democratic
communists.
Haters, you know, yeah, communists. Really, they were. It was pretty obvious. So it shows you that the teachers and stuff have really pushed that, not pushed, you know, the Constitution and what the country was supposed to be like. And,
well,
you know,
nowadays,
and
now,
you see it that they clearly don't understand it because there's many times that you see that. Well, in the first place, let's take the court system. They was never given the authority to create law or anything or enforce law. They was only given the authority to have an opinion on the law,
yep,
on the court system. I mean, they could give their opinion, and if you wanted to go with that opinion, but you didn't have to. And Jackson proved that because the Supreme Court ruled against him, and he simply said, okay, let's see you enforce it. You can enforce that. Go ahead. I don't think you can, and I'm going to go do what I want to, and he did, and that was all there was to it because they have no enforcement power. The only one that has any enforcement powers is the judicial system, you know, the president and that group. They're the only ones that have any enforcement powers of any laws, but to hear that. And I called the the Supreme Court the other day, and I was able to talk to the clerk of courts, and I asked him questions about how we do a redress of grievance, and they simply wouldn't answer. They said, well, you just have to follow the rules. Well, the Constitution says that they can't pass any laws on redress of grievances. But I couldn't get him to talk, so they said, well, you got to follow the rules, and they'd send me a list of the rules. And I could also go online, but it's hard for me to read all that stuff on the computer because, you know,
yeah,
you can't always turn back to the page and see what that one said. And this morning we're going to talk a lot. I just got some information that Trump was talking about putting an economist in the Federal Reserve that wants to go back to the gold system, to have gold-backed money. And it's really amazing how stupid they are because, first place, there's not enough gold to do that. I know. I've researched the amount of gold that's ever been mined over and over again, and I guarantee you it's not that much if you really understand it. Several years ago, I did that, and if the United States had all the gold in the world, they would only have enough and use it for money. It only lasts 3.9 years, and it will all go overseas just for the trade deficit we have. Well, what would you do then after that? You know, there wouldn't be any money in the country. And I'm sorry, but that can't work. And so I'm decided, and I haven't, of course, you can't look anything up on them. I tried, but I run out of time before the show starts. But I couldn't find anything about the woman they're going to put in. But the only group that I know that really is pretty all the time talking about gold should be the money is the Austrians. They're big into that. And that's what Ron Paul was, and he talked about that. And I was on the radio show one time with Ron Paul at the same time where we could talk to each other and hear that. And I brought up that the government can create some money, and he just was adamant that he knew no way you'd want the government creating any money. Well, somebody's got to create it. And the Constitution, Congress, clearly gave Congress the authority to, you know, to coin the money, create the money, because that verb's a verb. And so if they did, well, and if they spin it right, and then, of course, it says the only place they could, you know, with create post office and post codes to pay for them. So if you would do that, it would be a controlled money system, but yet the money would be put into circulation with no debt. But none of these people ever address that. Even the gold-backed money is still going to be bank money, bank-created money, because they wasn't going to use the gold for money. They were just going to use the gold to back up the currency that's already out there. So those things are something we're going to talk about a little more today. And if you're kind of through, we'll go ahead and get into that subject, and I'll turn it over to Greg. We'll start that with them and see what he thought about that concept of backing all the money with gold. Go ahead, Greg.
Before I do that, Leslie, you got anything you want to say before we start talking about this?
No, I'll catch up to you next week after I do a little more work on Phillips this week.
Okay. Be careful.
Great.
See you later.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was just this gold standard thing is it's really no different from what we have now. It's still a debt standard today since they changed it. Somebody has to go into debt to get money created. There's no other way to get money created nowadays. And even with the gold standard, all the gold standard they think, this is their thinking is it's easier to control inflation with the gold standard because it limits how much money can be created. But they don't talk about the fact that they're not going to use the gold for the actual medium of exchange. They're going to use it as reserves, okay? And based upon how much gold there is, says how much money they can create. But they're going to create it and lend it into circulation, and you will not get a gold coin, not that it really matters. You'll get numbers in your checking account, and you'll be in debt for those numbers, and you can spend those numbers. It's just like now. And they never address the difference, or they never even say the word that our money is created as debt. It's all created as debt. They never talk about that. They always lay it on inflation. Inflation is a big bad boogeyman, and that's what we have to control, and that's why we have to have this money system to control the inflation, which really means price
inflation.
Well,
in this thing that I was reading this morning, that they said that the government could create all the money and they needed to pay off the national debt. Well, if that's true, why don't they do it? If you could print the money and pay off your debt, well, you could print the money and spend it for other things besides paying off the debt. But even if they can do that, why don't they do it? How come they're start beginning to talk again about it won't be long before they'll have to raise the debt ceiling again? Well, if they're going to raise the debt ceiling, why do they do that? Why don't they just go ahead and create some money and spend it instead of raising the debt ceiling? And
right. It
appears to me like hardly these guys, any of them, really understand how the money system works. Mm-hmm. And, yes, I totally agree that the government can print money because I have been to Washington, D.C. I have been through the whole process, and they have a way that you can walk along and you can see each process. They start out with a paper. It's not really paper. It's cotton linen made into looks like paper. And then they go through that, and they go over on it until they finally go ahead and they put it up, and then they come out the back end and they cut the big sheets, and they cut them sheets. and then they put them in a pile, and then they put them on the dock, and then the Federal Reserve trucks or a truck comes and hauls it into the Federal Reserve system. And I have been there and watched that, so there's no question that's true, but no place did they ever talk about that they spent any of it. And Greg and I both know we have letters from the Treasury that says, well, they do print it, but they sell to the banks or the Federal Reserve banks for the cost of printing. Well, they don't do that for anybody else. And of course, years ago, when I first read that, it cost only a penny a piece to have a bill printed, whether it was a dollar bill or a $100 bill. So I sent them $100 and asked them to send me $100 bills. And they said, well, we can't do that because the Fed has to put up collateral. They buy the notes for the cost of printing, but then they have to put up collateral, the face value. And they gave me a list of all those, what they use for collateral. And one of them was eligible paper described by statute. So I looked in and researched that and found out it was notes by farmers, basically, and a few other business people. And they could use that as collateral. So then I sent them the collateral and sent them more money and asked for a lot more Federal Reserve notes. And then they wrote back and said, well, we're not authorized to give that to the public, period. We can't do that. Well, then what good is it to have the government print the money if they don't do anything with it but sell to the banks? And then even back in with gold, won't change the amount of money they can loan, because you could put any value on that gold. In fact, they talked about they make a gold coin now, and they charge $1,600 to get it, but on its face value, it's only stamped $50. Well, I know for a fact the law says a dollar is worth $22.22 an ounce. Well, okay, now if they're going to back this with gold, what price is it going to be valued at $42.22 an ounce, or going to be valued at $1,600 an ounce, or maybe $10,000 an ounce? It really isn't going to make a bit of difference, because it's still going to be the same money that's lent by the bankers. It's going to be the money. The gold is only supposed to be, I don't know, something to give it more official value, I guess. So I just see a rule signed in. So let's go to talk to Rule a little bit this morning, Greg. Let me click the button here so we can hear what he has to say. Good morning, Rule. How are you this morning?
Pretty good. Yeah, I'm here.
Good.
I guess
we're all here, or we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, I didn't.
Have you got anything to say? Anything new this morning that you've had experiences with lately?
Well, I had a three-hour conversation with a gentleman that I grew up with 30 years ago, and he crossed my path yesterday, and we talked. I actually showed him all your books, and we had a long three-hour discussion, and he might be listening today. I'm not sure, but he's gonna begin listening and probably call in here one of these days. But he's awakened to it now, and I guess I discussed with him. I had a new discovery on this whole money issue, and you know, he grew up in a private school, a Christian school, and he said, well, why didn't they ever teach us this? He said he even went to Bible college, and he said, why didn't they ever teach any of this? Why don't they teach this? And he said they've got it all backwards. And I said, well, I said, yeah, you would think they would teach it, because, you know, they always talk about, you know, sowing and reaping in churches and in the Bible and all this stuff. And I said, you know, if you sow a debt, you're always going to just keep reaping debt and destruction. You cannot reap anything positive. And I said, you know, if the church would understand that in their teaching, it would really, really awaken, I think, the the masses, because, you know, that's very, very relevant in their circles, is the whole, you know, sowing and reaping. They talk about every religion talking about it. So,
well, and also the Bible talks about usury, and that's a terrible thing. And they also talk about that men should not sleep with men like they do with women, which is clearly, and then they destroyed a whole town because they were so full of homosexuals that they destroyed the whole town. Well, obviously, the churches don't talk about any of those things either. They just go along with everybody. And I went to a Christian high school for 2 years, and I went back at a reunion four or five years ago now, whatever it was, and they had a speaker give us a big speech, and it was all about being saved and going to heaven. Well, pretty near everybody there had went to that Christian high school, and if they hadn't figured that out by then, why in the world would you give a speech about it to all these guys that went to school there? It goes to show you they have just completely lost concept or what really the Bible should be all about. It should be the way you should live, the Ten Commandments, and, you know, and how life should be lived with principles.
Right.
But that apparently had just gone out of the Christian churches now. In fact, I have no idea what the Christian churches even stand for anymore, because a lot of times they give up and give a message, and they don't even come from the Bible anymore. So it's amazing what we've gone. But it appears to me like the churches have come just into another source of having a job that you can get other people's money and spend it. And that's basically all they do. It's the best thing. Preachers and politicians are the best people there are to get other people's money and spend it. And that's what they do, but they never discuss where this money come from. And when I was on the phone the other day with the clerk of courts of the Supreme Court, I asked him, well, have you ever thought about how money is created and put into circulation? And she flatly would not answer me, period. She said, well, and I asked about how would I do a redress agreement? How would I get into the Supreme Court with a redress agreement? And all she would say is you have to follow the rules. Well, my Constitution says Congress could make no rules affecting the freedom of speech and the freedom of press and the right of redress of grievance. So it's pretty clear the Supreme Court is in the same place as all the rest of them. They just are run by the bankers and do what the bankers say. And they've also became to believe in that a judge can make law. The Supreme Court the other day said Trump couldn't put on the census that you have to take whether you was a citizen or not. They would rule against that. Well, I'm sorry, but they have no power to rule. They have power to give their opinion and say, now, yep, this is our opinion, and if you want to follow it, that's good, but we have no way to enforce it. For the executive branch, they do have power to enforce. And if Trump would only read the Constitution and pay some attention to it, we'd have a huge change. And you know, and of course, then in stuff I was reading about him appointing that woman, they talked a lot about the gold, and gold was always been money. And I've researched that for years and years and worked on it and really did it, because when I first started speaking on this subject, well, of course, everybody I talked to was gold nuts, and so I began to wonder, well, I wanted to know all about the gold. And so I looked up and how much gold has ever been mined from several different sources, and it all come out pretty much the same. And then I looked, and where did they ever use a lot of gold for money? And I could never find it. But silver, it's all clear that silver has been used for money a lot and a lot. But they never talk about the silver. It's always the gold. So it's clear that we're getting into an area that, again, that they have no real knowledge of what the heck they're talking about. Now I'll turn it back to Rule or Greg, whoever wants to talk.
Well, Rule, I just wanted to ask you what your friend thought, concluded at the end of your three-hour conversation. Did it impact him at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I left him some information, and he... since we got to do something about this, what can we do? And we brainstormed ideas. And I said, well, you know, it's an we're in an information warfare. You know, we're being led, you know, to believe a lie because we're being told that we're earning, you know, wealth money, and we're earning the opposite. We're earning a debt, and that is criminal when you think about it, because you're being told one thing, and it's the opposite. And so first and foremost, we discussed that it's an information warfare. We have to tell the truth, and the more people that understand the truth, the more power you have to make a difference.
Well, there's a lot of what I call truthophobes. There's a lot of people out there I call truthophobes, and we need to start using that word more often, because truthophobes are people that are afraid of the truth. And, man, they're just rampant out there. But I wanted to get back to this gold standard thing in this article and how it relates to they're actually saying what we would like to do, monetize the production of roads and bridges. In other words, have the treasury, not the banks, create the money and spend it in instead of taxing or borrowing to build roads and bridges, like the Constitution says, provide post offices and post roads, create or coin money, and promote the general welfare, that thing that's good for everybody. And in this article, Judy Shelton says about people who decide the cost of capital versus some kind of, she can't describe what kind of system it would be, that would determine the market supply rate, okay? And with the American Transportation Act, all we're doing is instead of borrowing for to build these roads and bridges, we're creating the money and spending it. And the market determines the rate through bidding, just like we do now. And it's an organic process, if that's what Judy Shelton wants to call it. Okay? But the people, you and I, citizens of the United States, decide, just like we do now when we want a pothole filled, a bridge fixed, anything related to roads and bridges, we decide. And then bids are let, and that determines the rate. And then that amount of money is created to pay for the project. And you cannot have this terrible boogeyman thing called price inflation when you increase the money supply with the increase in productivity. And so the American Transportation Act does many things that they're looking for in this article, but they don't have the history, they don't have the logic, they don't have the common sense they need about money in general to be able to figure it out exactly the way Wealth Money Group has with the proposed legislation called the American Transportation Act. And just and then you talk about free markets. Free markets should do this. Free markets should do that. There is no free market. There is none today when we're forced into debt to obtain the medium of exchange to do commerce. How can that be a free market? Another word, they don't even understand what they're talking about. Then they talk about self-regulating price signals. This is exactly what the American Transportation Act does through the building of roads and bridges. The people give the signal. They say, hey, let's fix that pothole. That's the signal, okay? And then the market rate is determined by the bid. And then the money comes from a treasury, where it should come from in the first place, not from the banks. I mean, after all, you have said many times, Treasury, Bureau of Engraving and Printing, and you have mints. What in the hell do you need a bank for to create money? And see, they don't address this. They don't even think about that, that they've got a treasury. It has computers that can create numbers. They've got a Bureau of Engraving and Printing that can print currency. They have mints that can create coins, yet they think they just cannot live without the banks. So I'm going to take a little breath here and regroup, so that I can tear into this thing a little bit more in a few more minutes, and I'll give Rule or Byron a chance to talk.
You go ahead, Rule, and then I'll get into it.
Yeah, Byron, what Byron said about the medium of exchange all throughout history, especially if you study biblical history, during Jesus' time, they had many currencies, and the widow, the parable of there was a parable of a widow with two mites, and those were copper coins. You had the coin of Caesar, which was silver. With his image on it, but what got the Jews in trouble and got the temple destroyed was they got tired of being forced to into honoring Caesar, and they minted their own currency with agriculture on it as a image of blessing and reproduction. And then, of course, they came in and said, you can't do that. They destroyed the temple and ransacked, took all their coins and everything. But and then Jesus comes along and, of course, overthrows the money changers because of usury, and that's what got him crucified. But all throughout history, there wasn't just one form of currency, and we're being told that, in our day and age, we have a piece of paper that does not represent anything other than involuntary servitude, and we shouldn't have to work only to borrow to have to give back. It's an insult to who we are.
You got it, man.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, of course, because we've been asking, of course, if you're going to decide how much it costs to build a road, well, the way they do it now is they put it out for bids. And anybody that can, in doing that kind of job, will then have the opportunity to bid on it, and it goes, it's supposed to go to the lower bidder that can do it at, there's certain standards, like a road has to be so deep so it can maintain so much, make sure it can handle all the weight of big trucks and all these kind of things, and that's all in there. Well, then anyone that can meet how it's supposed to be built, and then they set the price what we can do it for, and then they bid, and it goes to the lower bidder, at least it's supposed to. And see, that would set the prices. And of course, if all the interest is out, everything would cost 60% less about than it does now, just because the interest costs that much. And you can see why interest would do that, because everybody, you just said, you have to borrow the money to get the interest. Even somebody has to borrow the money to pay you. So always somebody is always paying interest on that. The truckers pay an interest. Everybody else is paying interest. The stores pay an interest. And when you add all those down to the product, it's bound to be a huge amount of the actual cost of the product. So if you took all that out, then automatically the price would drop. And pardon me. And if you begin to use those things, and then if more things went out on bids, well, then you would know that would itself set the value of the product. And then, again, and the Constitution says Congress shall coin the money and set its value. But see, people don't understand that had anything to do with the actual purchasing power. It had to do with, what you use for money. And if it was going to be silver, well, then the silver had to be a certain weight and a certain purity of silver, the same way as the gold. Well, of course, that can't be due with paper. But what got us in the trouble in the very first place, well, there was no money. And at the time this country was formed, and they started in the 1600s and 1700s, well, there wasn't even a gold mine in this country when the Constitution was first established and accepted. So they couldn't really use it without they got it from a different country. So, it all goes to show you that probably wasn't a really good idea anyway. And then, of course, obviously the people didn't believe it, because if they did, they wouldn't have followed Hamilton when he said, well, the best way to do this is just start a bank. And then we can borrow the money from them and get the money. And even the founding fathers clearly didn't understand it, because when they needed money for the Revolutionary War, or War for Independence, whatever you want to call it, well, they printed brand new money, but instead of printing it as money, they printed it as a promise to pay. Because I have held those coins in my hand, or them bills in my hand, them you know, notes in my hand, or no, it wasn't even really a true note. But they said, well, this is the money, and it will be redeemable in Spanish mill dollars or equivalent weight of gold or silver. Well, you know, they didn't have the Spanish mill dollars. If they did, they'd have just spent them and they'd be done with it. So they didn't have them. But so if they would have just printed that as currency, well, then, you know, they wouldn't had to ever have to worry about if people wanted to get their Spanish mill dollars or the gold and silver. Well, then, okay, obviously, if the people start asking for them, they wouldn't have it, so the thing would lose its value. Also, they always told us all our lives that it lost its value because they printed too much. Well, I have, in the book, Modern Money Secrets, I have the actual letter that was published in New York that said, you can come in here to this cafe and buy all that new money that you want for just the price of paper. So you have no concept how much of that was counterfeited. And it just goes to show you, we hardly ever really learn the truth. And when we get these kind of concepts, it takes a lot of research before you find
that's
all
right,
those yeah. things. And I know that
if
that's true, because when I was looking for that, go ahead.
Yeah, except you get the truth right here. You get the truth at Wealth Money Radio. And, you know, Judy Shelton says that money is just a token. Someone has to create and issue it into the economy. I love that word, issue. It leaves so open how they can do it. But there's only three ways that you can put the money into circulation. You can lend it all in. That's the way they do it now. You can spend it into circulation the way we propose to do it, or you can give it into circulation. And each of those ways has different consequences. But, you know, then she goes back and talks about for the believer in free markets. Now, really, is she a believer in a free market? Is President Trump? Is anybody out there a believer in the free market when they force their citizenry into debt to obtain money? Please, spare me. Okay. Then she talks about, again, these self-regulating price signals. Okay, if you don't have those, she says, how can you have a genuine market in anything? Well, Judy, the answer is you can't, and that's what we have now. And so then she goes on, basically how the gold standard worked in the past, and they don't have this right either, but she says, people would dig up the gold. That's true. They labored. The people had to do something first, something they had to physically apply themselves. And then the government, which should really, we should say our government, in our case, the U.S. Mint, would then press it into coins for them for a small fee. Well, let me tell you, there's a little thing right there. Yes, they would charge you a small fee if you wanted it right away and you just couldn't wait and you had to have it right now. They would charge you a little fee. But if you were willing to wait, it wouldn't cost you anything. And then you would walk out of there with money with no debt to you or anyone else. It was a debt-free medium of exchange based upon production that you did, representing that production, your wealth, and your ownership. Oops, Judy just forgot to talk about that little part of it. But then she says, then the person would deposit those coins with a private bank. Now, if they loved the gold coins so much, why did they immediately deposit them in the bank if they actually wanted to use the gold coins for money? We don't talk about that very much when it comes to that. In the economic circles. But then something very magical happened at that point. When a person deposited those coins at the private bank, the gold suddenly became the bank's reserves. Just like magic, it became the bank's reserves. It became the bank's. And then she says that the person that deposited it would get a paper IOU. And that is not true. They would get a certificate of deposit, which was not an evidence of debt. Why would that person receive an evidence of debt for depositing something? It's like if you deposited something in your safe deposit box you would get something saying that it's yours and it's in there. You can come and get it anytime you wanted. That's what a certificate of deposit is. The bank at the they wouldn't give you something that says you owe something for making that deposit. Okay, but anyway, so and then the banks can use those reserves to expand the amount of money they create. And that's all the gold standard thing is about, changing what the reserves are, really. Like, right now, your reserves are special drawing rights, commercial paper, eligible paper described by statute, and all this weird crap like that. Those are the reserves that they use as an excuse and rationale to create money, okay? And that's all the gold standard's going to be. They're going to use the gold. And you will never use the physical gold for money. So if there's any gold nuts out there thinking that would happen under gold standard, forget it. You will use something else to be a number.
Well,
in your checking
account.
Well,
even if they did, let's say that them gold coins, you know, let's say that you got your promise to pay and it was a promise to pay gold coins. Well, if a lot of people started to turn in their paper money and ask for the gold, because they really think they ought to have gold, and you're always hearing on TV how, my gosh, you know, we got a lot of debt, and the best way to help yourself, to save yourself, is to buy gold. Okay, yeah. So if you was going to buy gold, well, I don't know what you'd buy it with, you know, other than, you know, the debt money. But if you did get the gold, wouldn't you then want to use the gold as your medium exchange? And, of course, to show you how this works, you know, we started out that the very first gold found in the United States was found by a kid in North Carolina playing in the creek. And he found this big yellow rock, and he thought it was pretty. He didn't know what it was, so he took it home and showed it to his parents, and they thought it was pretty, but they didn't know what it was. So, and you can go online and find all this about the first time where gold was first discovered. And so they just used it as a doorstop to hold the door open in the hot summer. And then one day a jeweler happened to come by and he saw it and he said, well, that's gold. And so he wanted to buy it, so they sold it to him. Well, then they decided they'd start mining, but the thing that I really found interesting, they was going to start mining, but first they had to get all their crops in and get it harvested. So they made sure they had plenty of stuff to live on the next year. And then they started looking for the gold. So the gold wasn't near as important as making sure you had enough food to eat in the wintertime. And, you know, all these things you never hear about. And I have spent hours and hours researching this every way I could, and these are the facts that I found. And even we used to have gold certificates and silver certificates. And that began when, back some time ago, they wanted, just like now, we need to get a little more gold and silver in our economy and all this and stuff. And so then they either had to find a mine, which somebody had to mine it out and then take it in and make it, or they get it from gold and silver coming into the country. So when it came in, then there was a law that said you had to take it and deliver it to this place, and they would take it, and then they'd give you a gold certificate saying there was so much gold here. Well, then they would take that gold and mint it down and then re-put it into coins and under the rules of the law in this country, how much weight and stuff and purity a gold coin would be or a silver coin. And that's where your gold certificates and your silver tickets come from, and I know I have some. Hell, and, you know, no question, I know exactly what they look like because I have some. Well, then you go back in and you see the Federal Reserve notes. Well, when they started out, and you can go on our website, our wealthmoney.org, and see all this, they then would start out with they had the coins that was redeemable in gold. And it says that right on it. And then they changed them and said redeemable and lawful money. But they never defined what lawful money was. Well, then later on, they took and it said the same thing, but it was real fine print. It didn't stand out. Then they changed it to where the whole concept of being able to reserve, you know, backed up by somebody that just says they're Federal Reserve notes, legal tender. They didn't say anything about you could get lawful money or gold or silver with them. I mean, you know, go to the bank or government and ask them to give it to you. So that all changed, and yet hardly anybody knows that or even thinks about it. Because, you know, and I'm learning more and more that economists really have no concept how money is created. It's only how you use the money. And that's kind of proven by this Judy gal, because it's clear she has no real concept about how the money is created and put into circulation and what you got to do to get it. And even then they talk about reserves, but that's really not true either, because we have a letter from the Treasury that when they sell this money to them, they have to put up collateral. But when they actually buy government bonds, they just write a check upon themselves, the check count that has no money. So they create brand new money to buy the bonds. Well, then they go and put that in the reserve account. And so the other banks that are doing this, well, then they would have that there. But see, it would originated with just money created as number in a checking account that they created when the check come back to them to pay. And it
nice.
Takes a lot of research to get all this stuff done. And now I'll turn it back to both Ruel and Greg, whoever wants to go.
Ruel, what do you think?
Well, I think, I agree with everything he said, and the people, I could only wish and hope that they would get tired of being used and misused and understand that life isn't what they think it is, and we have to get back to a system that is for the benefit of and for and by the people.
Right.
Right now, it's if someone has a monopoly on this product, so-called, that we're using, and they're capitalizing on it. And if this is a free country, we should be the ones, it's our country, we should be the ones that benefit from our labor, not have it extracted so we can borrow only to pay back.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
that's
when Byron,
true.
When Byron was talking about, you know, they promised to pay Spanish mill dollars or equivalent silver, and they didn't have it. And, you know, there's a lot of examples of that where, and I think that whole thing is where the whole fraudulent idea of faith, it's a system built on faith. It's a system built on a faith believing in the fraud. There is nothing there that you can, they can't cover it, but we just have faith that they do. We continue to let them perpetuate the lie. We continue to be the victims of that lie, and that's because it's a money system based on faith. I mean, isn't that really what
but actually,
this faith
it's a money
is?
System based on fraud.
Right,
and lies.
And the faith.
Because,
and we have,
and then
and we
you,
have
you
to have
understand
faith.
It's...
We
it's
have
hard
to have
for
faith
most people. They grow up believing something, and then you come along and tell them something that's totally different. They have a hard time wanting to believe that, because we just have a tendency to believe what we've been taught all our lives. Well, and then you come along and you say, well, this isn't actually how it works. It works this way. Well, the first reaction for most people is reject it. And then after they think about it a while, and I've had that personal experience many times, and also I sent a book to to one guy personally, and then another guy just happened to get it, a neighbor sent it to him. But the exact same reaction was both. They both picked up the book and read it, thought it was interesting, and then they put it down. And then about a year later, they stumbled onto it, and this is a true story of both these people. And one of them had a radio show in Missouri, and he picked it up and read it again, and he said, my gosh, you know, this is really good. And then he started pushing it on his radio show, and it was so popular they called it his book, not the book that I wrote, but it didn't make any difference to me. But it goes to show you how it takes some people quite a while, and then they have to read it again before it really sinks in. This is really what it is. It fits with what I've really experienced in life. And then I got to tell you about another story about this guy that had that, because he was a big businessman. He also had this radio, but he had a big ranch and a lot of cattle. And one day his banker called and said, "Man, you're really way over, you know, your debt is way over your assets." And he said, "Well, I've never had any problem before." So he went in and talked to him, and so they got to looking at it. And of course, the price of the cows when he started was a lot lower, but nobody raised the price of the cows in the bank. So pretty quick, you know, he was buying more land, more cows, and of course his debt was going up more, and he didn't have the collateral. So then they talked about it and said, "Well, here's the problem. We got to raise the price of these cows up to $900 a head, and then you'll be in great shape. You'll have plenty of collateral for your debt." Now, the cows didn't change any, just the price of the cows. And see, this goes to show you how fraudulent the whole system is. It's not really based on, and Greg used a word that I can't remember now exactly what he said about this woman that had these signals they had to go by. Well, what are
right.
these signals? How did they define them? All this kind of stuff that they never talk about. I mean, it's nice to say things, but I guess I'm not as bright as most people because I have to know what those words actually mean.
Well, look, today,
and if you don't
today,
understand them words, what they actually mean and what they mean by using them, how in the world do you really understand what they just said?
Right. And, you know, those signals today are just when the bank decides it wants some more profit, then it gets a signal it better make a loan to somebody. That's the signal. I mean, but
and it also shows you that the banks have to have constantly raising the price of things, or they don't have enough collateral to make the loans. So they have to raise the prices. The prices have to go up. Otherwise, they wouldn't have the collateral to make the loans they need to make. And they have to make more loans because that's what the system works on, is more debt.
And the funny thing,
if it's clear that if you borrow $100 and then you have to get back $110, well, you've got to have an increase in the money supply. You can't pay back the $110. Because if all that's out there, and I personally experienced that right in the courtroom, because I was in the courtroom and they were saying, "Why are you raising so much the thunder?" Because with this money, well, don't you believe Federal Reserve notes are legal tender? And I said, "I agree that. That had nothing to do with it." "Well, what is it then?" I said, "Well, if you let me have some material in my briefcase, I'd explain it to you." So they did. And I said, "Okay, now we're going to start out." And there were seven lawyers in the room. And I said, "You lawyers agree that banks can create money?" And they all shook their head, "Yes." "Okay, so now," and they loan this money out. "Yeah." And I said, "Okay, now I'm going to be the bank, and the lawyer here with this question me will be the farmer, so I'll loan him a dollar." And they all agreed that which could be done, and that's what happened. And I said, "Now they charge interest," and they all agreed that, yes, they charge interest. So then I said, "Well, oh, they also have to have collateral, don't they?" And they all agreed. So the guy gave me he said, "Okay, my pencil will be the collateral here." And I said, "Okay, now, at one point, there had to be a first time." And they all agreed. And I said, "Okay, this will be the first time. Now, I've decided not to create any more money, so would you please give me the $1.10 you owe me?" And he looked at me, and he looked at his hand, he looked at the dollar, and he looked back at me, and he reached in his pocket and took out his pen and laid it on the dollar and gave it to me. And I took it, and I turned to the judge and said, "Didn't take long to get his property, did it?" That's what I'm complaining about. And the judge just got mad as heck. You can't believe how much of a rant he got started. So it goes to show you they themselves can't even and don't want to hear the truth or understand the truth. No, they have a system. They believe in a system. They were taught in a system, and by God, that's where we're going to have it.
Didn't Byron, when we took Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis to court up in the cities that one time, and we went through it with the judge trying to get him to understand what we were doing, didn't he then suddenly hit the desk with his gavel? He was upset. And then he said he'd taken under advisement. And so that was, you know, that's what happened when he saw the truth. And of course, we had just taken a Federal Reserve Bank note to the Federal Reserve Bank because it said would pay the bearer on demand $500. So when we went to get the $500, they said, well, we don't have, we don't know what you're talking about. I said, well, you're promising to pay $500. It says right here on your note, so we just want the dollars. So we had to take him to court, and we took him to court for that.
And then he didn't even, well, what do you mean dollars? And I said, well, there's all kinds of them. I have four different things right here in my pocket that all say they're dollars, but they're all something totally different. And the only place that I've ever seen the written definition of a dollar is the 1792 Coinage Act, where it says a dollar should be a weight of silver, 371 and a quarter grains of silver, pure silver. And I said, but they say they changed that, but I have looked and looked and looked, and I can't find where they ever changed it, repealed it, or anything. And I didn't know that laws died of old age. So, but I thought maybe, Judge, with your help, you know, you got people working on you, AIDS and stuff, why don't you find that out? And then that's when he really got excited. Because I found also, if you start asking people to give you the statutory definition of a dollar, boy, the conversation stops really fast.
And he took it under advisement, and we got a letter in the mail that basically said that the Federal Reserve note that we had promising to pay us $500 was payment. In other words, the promise
the
to pay us. Yeah. So how would you like, if your checking account worked that way, you just promised to pay, and that would be the payment. And see that?
Oh, I'd love that, wouldn't that? You could just go in the store. Well, I want to buy a brand new car, so I'll promise to pay you, you know, $20,000, $30,000, whatever it is. And here's the promise to pay. Oh, and you don't need to come get them because that'll also be the payment. That's the way the bank works. That's the way the court said it worked. So that would be the payment. So you're already paid.
And that was
isn't that a great way to run a country? I mean, and these idiots think they're going to solve that by putting a little gold behind the debt money system and never addressing it, period.
And let me say that the $500 Federal Reserve note that we had a promise to pay on it. If you look at the Federal Reserve notes that you have today, there is no promise to pay anything on it, and because they finally figured out, well, heck, if our promise to pay can be payment, why even put the promise to pay on there? Because we don't have to redeem our notes for what we say. And so now today, all it is.
And then when
is,
they do that, the very fact they do that proved they didn't pay any attention to the law, because the definition of a note is a promise to pay. It can't be the payment. It's a promise to pay. That's the definition of what a note is. Either that or it's a note that says, well, hi, honey, I left a note on the desk for you when I left this morning. So, you know, well, something I want you to do for me. That's a note. But see, a monetary note is clearly a promise to pay you something. And yet all of a sudden they said, well, our promise to pay is the payment.
And to be legal, a legal note, it has to contain three elements, I believe. It has to be signed by the issuer. It has to have a promise to pay a certain thing at a certain place in time to
That's
the
right.
bearer, something like that. But the notes, Federal Reserve notes we have today, don't meet the legal standard of a definition of a true note in any way, shape, or form. And in this article, about Judy Shelton, they write in here and says, banks no longer issue paper banknotes. And that's not really true. She said they've been replaced with just think about it, though, because she says they've been replaced with deposits. We all trade back and forth with checks and credit cards, debit cards, and iPhones. Meanwhile, the Fed issued banknotes, the things banks hold in reserve, and that we can exchange for our deposits with them, are blah, blah, U.S. paper dollars. But, like the bank's ability to issue limitless banknotes against their gold reserves, the Fed could issue unlimited quantities of its own banknotes. Well, nobody, the Treasury, the banks, nobody issues those into circulation. You got to buy them, okay? And to say that
Greg,
they don't
issue... let's get this straight here. Because they do, but see, they don't issue in themselves. They used to actually print them themselves, but they don't anymore. Well, I went down to Washington, D.C., and there was lots of, after Jackson set down the central banks, there was a lot of state banks. And there was a whole shelf there that with all the different currencies that they had printed. But today, they do not print their own anymore.
Right, I know,
all
I know that.
All the printed currency is printed by the Treasury. And the Treasury prints them all themselves, and then they sell them to the banks for the cost of printing. And then the banks put them out. You can go in there and take a check and say, okay, here, I want to get cash for this. I don't want to put it in my bank account or anything. I want cash for it. Great, and they'll roll out the cash unless it's too big. If it's too big, then they have a problem. Because I went to the bank one time, and I had $26,000 in the bank, and I said, well, I want it out. And they said, well, we can't do that. And we went around and around, and I said, oh, what can't – well, and then they say finally, well, would you take a bank note, a note from this bank? And I said, well, what is that? Well, that's a promise to pay from this bank, you know. And then I said, okay, I'll do that. And so they did it to me, and they laid it out there, and I said, now this is – a promise to pay by your bank, right? Yeah. I said, okay, I want you to cash your own check then. And if you don't do it, I'm going to go to the sheriff and I'm going to file charge against you for writing bad checks. And, oh, God, you could have seen how they was calling other banks and calling the sheriff. But finally, they couldn't get out, so I finally got it all. And if I'd had just $20 more, they wouldn't have been able to done it. So they're true when they're saying the banks no longer print their own currency.
They didn't say that. They didn't say the banks no longer print. They said the banks no longer issue.
That's right.
See, it's the issue word. You know, and the fact of the matter is, the Treasury told me it's the only place I can get them. And so I went down to the bank.
They don't actually issue them either. That's a lie, too. Because they buy them from the Treasury and then give them to you if you want them at the bank.
This is exactly my point. Are we using the correct words? I mean, issue. Should we use the word issue the money in the circulation? Should we say it's loaned in, spent in, or gifted into circulation? They always use the word, the magical word issue, because it leaves it completely up to the imagination of how you think this whole system works. And
I understand what you're saying now, and I agree with you.
Yep, if they would have said banks no longer print paper banknotes, shit, I know that. I know that, okay? But they didn't no longer issue them, you know? And then it says...
The question is, what does the word issue mean?
Yeah, and it says, the Fed could issue unlimited quantities of its own banknotes. Really? Well, how does the Fed issue them? And you've just previously stated how that all works. Okay, the Bureau of Printing and Engraving prints them. It sells them to the Fed for the cost of printing. That's how the Fed gets them. Now, how does the Fed issue them? Okay, that's the magical word right there. And unlimited quantities. Well, I suppose unlimited quantities, if the Fed wants to write unlimited checks on itself to get, but I mean, they just never use the right word.
They can buy all the currency they want.
Yeah.
They go down there, and they actually put in an order for how many Federal Reserve notes they want. That's how it's done. They actually put in an order, and
then when
the Treasury gets that order, then they fill that order by printing up the amount of currency they want, and so many hundreds, and so many ones, and so many tens, and that's exactly they put in an order for it, and the Treasury fills the order by actually doing it.
And then they said they could issue unlimited quantities. So how do they issue them? How do I get them?
Well, they just put in they put in a bigger order.
But how do I get them?
Well, then you have to go to the bank and you have to buy them with checkbook money.
So somehow after the Fed prints them, then they send them over, they issue them over to a bank, and then I got to go there and I got to.
Well, no, they don't issue them. They don't issue them. We're talking about a word we don't really understand what it means.
It has many
meanings.
Because
the banks themselves sell, the Federal Reserve Bank sell those notes to the other banks for the full price of the note.
Yep. So That's how they issue them. What does that word issue mean? That's right. And isn't that the magical word to keep people confused from really understanding what's going on? And you know, we talk about this all the time, what the words mean, and it's like the Constitution, you know. We have a right to redress a grievance, but it doesn't say anything in there about having to have an attorney. Doesn't say anything in there about anything else. It's just like involuntary servitude.
Yeah, it does. It says the Congress can pass no laws regulating that.
Yeah.
That's clearly what it says.
Yeah. And you don't have to have, it doesn't say you got to have an attorney. You know, but that's what the court told us.
And it doesn't say that you have to follow the rules, because it says the court that they will not issue any rules.
Yep. And it's just like,
so you should be able to just go there and say, okay, I want you to make a decision on this or opinion on this, which is a better word than you know, because actually that's all they can do is issue an opinion. And then if the government wants to follow that opinion, that's fine. But if they really don't, they don't really have to. Now, there could be some argument out whether they might have to then go change the law so that everybody agreed or not. Now, that's never been addressed that I've ever been able to find anyway. What would happen if the president, and the only thing I've ever read in history was when Jackson said, well, I don't happen to agree with you. So I don't think you have any enforcement power. So if you do, let's see you do it. And if not, well, I'll do what I want to do. And if Trump would take a little bit more of that attitude, well, a lot of things would change.
Well, can you imagine?
Because now they say if some silly judge in some little district says that you can't do this, well, then Trump just backs off. But see, that's not the way it's supposed to work. Because,
can you imagine?
Okay, now we got to decide here whether I want to agree with your opinion or not. Now, we know for a fact you have no enforcement powers, but see, today they think they do, because there was a case where this woman wouldn't do a certain thing that the court ordered, so they fined her and put her in jail and everything. But see, legally they have no enforcement powers. So it just again shows you how far we've gone down the line of not following the rules that we're supposed to follow.
It's funny how these judges can and lawyers and stuff can interpret things. The words are written, but to them, that isn't what the words really mean. They mean something else. And can you imagine if when a judge gave his written opinion about something, the receiver of that written opinion said, well, I know this is what you wrote, but we need to have it interpreted as to what you really meant. He would go through the ceiling.
Well, that's what the courts do. Now, I have personally got a copy of Mueller's report. And as you go through it, especially toward the end of the first section, he then starts using court cases as his proof of what is right and wrong.
Yeah.
Well, see now, and I guarantee you court cases change all the time. I have personally had the judge change the meanings of words in two different. He used it one way in one court case, and a month later, it all of a sudden that whole definition changed because he didn't want to apply it. And see, so now you've got a case where actually there is no law except what the judge says on that day, and on the next day that law could change. And then I had an attorney general, government
district
enforcer. No, he was actually a government agent, you know. And he told me that every word that comes out of the mouth of a judge is law. Well, see, think of the nonsense that the untruth that really is. Because if that's the case, the law would be ever-changing depending on how the judge felt that day. And that can't be what laws are. But see,
well,
this is how we've gone so far down the line of even trying to live under the rules that were set forth by the Constitution.
So I guess next week maybe we can talk more about the gold standard. But the thing to remember about the gold standard, it's still a debt standard. You still got to be in debt to get money created. And, you know, you're not going to be using the gold for money. You won't see it in any way, shape, or form. You still be in debt. We'll still have all the consequences of the debt, and or we can talk about some other aspect of money too.
Well, it's like she said, you know, I mean, even after you got the gold, the first thing she said you did was put it in the bank and get an IOU. Now, why would you want to do that? I mean, why would, if you had it, why wouldn't you just want to go ahead and keep it or use it or spend it? Why would you want to get it at the bank and get an IOU? Now, I could see you get a certificate that said, well, this is here and it's yours anytime you want it. But no, an IOU? Well,
yep.
Now, they owe you back the gold, maybe? And see, this is, again, it's people have to pay a lot more attention to the definition of words. And I'm getting to, I find more and more words I get from Facebook that I can't find any place in the dictionary. So I guess we can just make up words anytime we want to. And then after we use it so long, then somebody will put it in the dictionary.
Yeah. And people wonder why you got so much screwed up things going on in the world and in America when not only do you have more and more proliferation of more different languages, within those languages, you have the constant changing and inventing of words and the meaning of words. How in the hell is anybody supposed to communicate and get everybody moving in the right direction?
Before we close, we'll give Rule a chance to make a statement.
What kind of a statement?
I don't know.
How do I follow up on all of that? We talked yesterday during our three-hour conversation. It's a rigged game of magic, and you know it's a sleight of hand, and they have to, in order to keep this whole thing going, people have to keep in the illusion game that what you have is wealth, because the moment you believe or understand that it's the opposite, you know, the scales fall off and the whole thing is over. So they have to constantly keep up in the ante, keep people deceived, believing the opposite. And so far it's worked, but, you know, for how long?
Well, I think it hasn't, but the question that I have, how long can it work before there is not even enough money in the circulation to even actually pay the interest trying to get it from somebody else?
Yep.
I mean, how can you keep loaning money to somebody that has no collateral anymore at all? And that's what's got to happen sooner or later.
Well,
or,
I guess,
you know, after a while, a car will be worth $10,000. I guess if you go that route long enough, can you imagine what will that be like and how high cost the things will be?
I think that I think the way that works, and we haven't been told, but when you think about it a lot, where this money is all created and loaned into circulation, those folks too, I don't know if it's necessarily at the bottom level banks, but at the top level banks, I think in order to keep this thing rolling, they create money and they spend it with no debt to themselves or anyone else. I just don't see how you can, like in America, have $75 trillion in debt and have $14 trillion in money, all a debt too. And, you know, you'd think that the interest sooner or later, the debt would be so huge. So, you know, they don't want to, they don't want their system to stop working for them. So who's to say, and you would never know, if they created numbers and just spent them into circulation, you would never know. But it seems to me somebody might have to be doing that from time to time.
Well, it's clear that they say, the banks say that they can create money as investments. But I can never find out. I've never been able to find anybody that could tell me what those investments might mean. So we see just all kinds of, around where we live, all kinds of big high rises that are going up. It's got to cost a lot of money. And I keep, every time we go by a bunch of them, I ask my wife, well, I wonder where all that money came from. But you could see how easy it would be if these big banks could create the money to just build that new, you know, building.
Yep.
Because that's, you know, you can create money, you know, for investments. Well, that could be clearly a good investment. and there'd be no limit to the amount of money they could have to do that. And all that would do would then help protect us. And if they don't keep the interest rate low, years ago, Greg and I went to a couple of banking auditors, and they both admitted that they just couldn't hardly raise the interest much, because if they did, the people with the loans wouldn't be able to stay in business. So you see, it's already getting tough, and I could see where doing those kind of things would really put a lot of money into circulation that nobody ever thinks about actually being there, but still it comes as an absolute benefit to the banks and nobody else.
Yep, and you know,
with that, I think it's time.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
Okie dokie. I hear the music.
Byron and Greg want to thank you for listening to the Wealth Money Radio Show. Please visit our website at wealthmoney.org. We would appreciate your support by purchasing the books and materials. Don't just purchase the books, but study the information we have presented and tell others the truth of our debt-based system, the problems interest causes, and the slavery it promotes. Thank you for your support.